Hi, this is Darren Rouse from ProBlogger, and welcome to the 31 Days to Build a Better Blog question and answer podcast. I promised on ProBlogger last week that I would spend an hour answering questions from people who had bought the 31 Days to Better Blogging workbook, and so that's what I'm going to do now. I've had over 120 questions submitted, and I only have 1 hour, so I apologize now for not getting through everything, but I will try and motor through as many as I can. I'm going to do this in hopefully a fairly unedited fashion. I haven't really done much preparation for each question, so a lot of it's off the cuff. I wanted this to be as much like an interview as possible, so as if we were speaking face to face. So I hope that this is helpful for you, and I hope I get to the question that you might have asked. So I'm going to tackle these questions pretty much in a random order, and hope that this is helpful. Let's get into the first one. The first one's from Seth W. I would like to ask you, what is the single greatest tip you would offer for bloggers who are trying to go from part-time blogging to becoming a professional blogger? Probably the first thing I would say to those who are wanting to go pro is to take your time. I semi-regularly get emails from people who email me and tell me that they are about to quit their job and go pro and go full-time as a blogger. And that always scares me a lot, particularly when I look at the blogs that they already have, and sometimes they don't even have blogs at all. They just have this illusion in their mind that they can just go pro whenever they feel like it. And the reality is that it takes a long time to build a successful blog. So please don't just quit your day job unless you've got some savings that you could well burn through. That would be my first tip. I guess the next thing after that is to pick a topic that is something that you could see yourself writing about for the long haul. And I've talked about this numerous times on ProBlogger in the past, but a successful blog takes years to build up, and so you need to be willing to think and write and interact around a certain topic for that long. And then it's about really working as hard as you can to build that blog into something that can sustain you in a full-time level. A lot of people start with the goal of, you know, a certain amount of money. You know, I need to earn $20,000 a year, or I need to earn $50,000 a year, or whatever it might be. My own strategy in the early days of blogging was much more about setting myself traffic goals and trying to increase traffic by 10% or 20% a month. That was really, I remember probably about a year into my blogging, that was my goal, 20%, 10 to 20% extra a month I wanted to earn, to have in terms of traffic. Because I knew if I could sustain that type of growth over, you know, 2-3 years, that I would have quite sizable traffic. So instead of sort of setting yourself a massive goal, set yourself those types of goals and see how you go. Okay, Vincent Spareboom asks, there is something I'm curious about. Now that you've reached 5,000 posts, he's talking about ProBlogger, and manage multiple blogs, what was your biggest mistake, misjudgment involving blogging? As I look back, there's been a number of mistakes, and one of them was starting, my first blog was on a .org.au domain. I live in Australia, as you can probably tell from my accent, and so started a .au blog, and really that was a mistake in some ways, in that when you try and find advertisers for a blog and you present them with a .org.au, if those advertisers are from outside of Australia, and most of my readers were from outside of Australia, so I was trying to find advertisers to match, they don't tend to look too well at that type of domain. So that was one of the mistakes I started did early. Not securing ProBlogger.com early enough. I do have it now, but I had to pay a lot more in the end for that, because I'd already built up the brand of ProBlogger, and so the guy who was squatting that domain was able to charge me a lot more for it because I'd made that term into something. So that was some of the mistakes, but a lot of those came about simply because I didn't know where things were going to end up. And I guess I'd say even despite some of those mistakes, I've still managed to get where I am today and have some success. So no matter what mistake you make, there are ways to, I guess, overcome them. Josh asks, is there any evidence to suggest that doing different blog post types, for example, review posts or list posts, scheduled on particular days and advertising this fact is any better? And this is one of the things that we talked about in 31 Days to Build a Better Blog, is setting yourself an editorial calendar where on each different day of the week you might set yourself a different type of post to write. And now, I should say, this is not something that I personally do, but it is something that I've seen a number of bloggers do, particularly in those dry times where they're struggling to come up with ideas to write about on their blog. I haven't seen evidence that, you know, promoting that, you know, Tuesdays is review day and Wednesdays is rant day, that actually helps your readers in any way. I guess it depends a little bit upon your particular type of reader. For me, that type of thing is more about you as the blogger and sustaining yourself as a blogger rather than doing something on your particular blog. But I guess you could brand yourself in that way and have different types of posts on different days and actually let your readers in on what you're doing. I can't see why that would hurt. Perhaps you lose a little bit of the spontaneity of your blog, but I don't think that's a massive problem. Rod B asks, what tool or method do you use to keep notes or jot down ideas for blog posts? He suggests, do you use a notebook or a smartphone? I do have notebooks. I'm one of those people who, I'm sitting here at my desk at the moment, I can see four notebooks around me. I tend not to use the same one everywhere. I always try and have one with me. I'm not talking about an electronic notebook, I'm talking about pen and paper here. I also have an iPhone, so I'm able to jot notes on the go with that. But a lot of the things that I do, really, I'm on my computer so much that I just use blank text documents on my computer and just write down my ideas there, or quite often I'll actually write down an idea as a draft of a post, and so I'll save that into the drafts area of WordPress if it's a post idea. You know, I'll write, you know, an idea for a title, then I'll write a few ideas for points in that post, and then I'll just save it as a draft and I'll come back to it later. That's if I think that the idea is actually worthy of a post. So yeah, I don't really use too many programs. I've tried Evernote on my iPhone a bit, and that's okay. It syncs quite well with computer and iPhone, but yeah, I'm probably a little bit more impulsive and chaotic than that. Manshu asks, what is the right way of creating a newsletter? And can you point to some resources that give a little guidance on creating newsletters for bloggers? Let me start by saying I think newsletters are a fantastic way of building a readership. They have been one of the biggest drivers of traffic for my own blogs, particularly my photography blog. I've had a newsletter there for a couple of years now, and I have 170,000 subscribers to it. And every Friday I'll send out a newsletter, which basically is a summary of the posts that have gone up on the blog over the last week. You can go to Digital Photography School and actually sign up for it for a week and just see what I do if you'd like. And I find that sends significant traffic. The day I send that is always the biggest day of traffic on the site. So it is really crucial, and there's some posts on ProBlogger about why newsletters are great. The resource that I use for that is a paid one. It's called Aweber, Aweber.com. Or if you search on ProBlogger and you find the affiliate links, you can sign up with those there if you'd like and earn me a dollar or two. But it's a great tool, very feature rich. You're not paying, you are paying for the product, so you need to expect something that's quite good. I find the deliverability of the emails to be very good in comparison to a free service that I used to use called Zucoder, which had a lot of problems. I don't even know that you can use it anymore. So yeah, I found that particularly useful. For me, the newsletter can be any number of things. I know a lot of bloggers use newsletters more to promote products and affiliate products. That can work if the expectation with those who are signing up is that they're going to get promotions. But for me, it's more about driving traffic, and I do have an advertisement or an occasional affiliate ad in there, but for me, it's more about driving traffic back to my blog, and I monetize the blog rather than the newsletter. Marcus Goodyear asks, I'd like to know what process and human resources you use to manage online communities, especially as they grow. How can a blogger continue to be accessible as a community grows larger? Or is a blog really just a media outlet with a little sense of community? Yes, there are three questions there, but they are kind of related. Yeah, it is one of the struggles that I have with my blogs as they've grown larger, and particularly having three blogs, all of which have their own communities on them. Yeah, it is hard not to be able to interact with every comment and every reader like I used to be able to when my blogs were smaller. I guess one of the things I've tried to instill into my each of my blogs is that I'm not at the centre of it. Whilst I know about the topics that I write about, I strongly believe that we as a community on the blogs know a lot more than me, and so I'm always inviting people to share what they know in the comments and as guest posts. And I find that helps a little bit to dispel the myth that the blogger has to answer every question. I'd rather my community be a part of that process. Having said that, I have someone now, Lara Culper, who helps me to administrate comments on ProBlogger, and she alerts me to comments where I need to make a particular answer if I miss it myself. And she answers a lot of the questions herself and tries to build that community too. And that's one of the things that I'm able to do. She works a couple of hours a day just helping in that particular area. Other than that, it's just a lot of work. And I guess the other thing I'd say is on my photography blog, I have a team of volunteer moderators who help me run the forums there, and a paid administrator, Simon, who's my brother-in-law, and again, they help to run the community on that particular site. So I guess there does come a time for many blogs, many forums and sites that you do need to bring in help and get support in different ways. Hope that answers your question, Marcus. Clara Matthews asks, my question relates to privacy policies and disclosures and how and when a blog needs to publish them. My blog is 7 months and I have less than 100 subscribers and I'm just starting to use affiliate ads. Do I need a disclosure statement? In terms of disclosure, I'm not sure on the latest in terms of the law on this. I personally have a page on my blogs which is a disclosure, where I talk about the fact that to help get the blogs running, I run advertising and I promote affiliate products. I used to have a little affiliate link disclosure next to every time I had an affiliate link. In the end, I found readers were more annoyed by those than anything else, and so I don't proclaim it loudly from the rooftops, but have a site-wide disclosure policy. In terms of privacy policies, one of the things you'll need to do if you are an AdSense publisher is to come up with a privacy policy. They're requiring that now, and I think a lot of advertising networks now are. So you might want to look at that. That's something that I've got on my to-do list at the moment. But in terms of disclosure, really, there are, again, I don't know the law on this. You need to talk to a lawyer about that, but bloggers have a whole heap of different stances. Some disclose every affiliate link they mention individually, some have site-wide ones, some don't have any at all. And I guess that really comes down to your own ethics and style and approach as a blogger. Jason James, I just set up a new blog and I have spurts of traffic, like 550 yesterday and only 75 today. What is the secret to sustained day-to-day traffic? Well, Jason, partly I would say it comes down to blogging consistently over the long haul. system and building traffic slowly over time. You will have spikes in traffic as people link up to you, or as a post might do well in a social networking or social bookmarking site. That's perfectly natural, but what you should be looking at is the overall trend. Try and ignore those spikes to a certain degree, or at least to convert those spikes of traffic into regular readers. But you should be looking at, is your traffic trending up, or is it trending down, or is it plateaued on an average sort of basis. In terms of building that trend in a positive direction, there's a post on ProBlogger. I think it's got 21 tips on building a sticky site. I'd recommend that you search for that and read it. It's about creating a site that is sticky, and by sticky I mean a site where someone comes for the first time and they want to come back the next day, or they're stuck to that site. One of the big ways of doing that is by getting people to subscribe, either via RSS or email or on a newsletter. And that actually helps to drive someone back to your site again tomorrow who might have arrived there today. Getting people to read multiple articles on your site rather than just one actually increases the chances that they'll come back, because every time they read something of yours, your brand is reinforced in their mind. Posting every day, one of the things a lot of bloggers will notice is on the days they post, their traffic's up. On the days they don't post, it goes down. And so if you can be producing a post on a regular basis, whether it's daily or every second day, but that regular posting and even increasing the frequency of your posting can help to just keep that traffic steady and on the rise. And really it comes down to being as useful as possible. If you produce a post that is helping people, solves a problem, meets a need for them, you're going to build some anticipation in their minds that you will write something tomorrow that might be like that as well, and so they'll want to be a subscriber or a member of your site. So yeah, it's about being consistent in your writing. That is often also reflected in the consistency of your traffic. Jeff asks, Darren, 31 days is great. Well, thank you. I am really enjoying it and learning a lot. I may have missed it, but what is your criteria for affiliates and advertisers? How in-depth are your background checks, and do you continue to screen them as time goes on to ensure they're maintaining the level of service you aspire to? This is a good question, because the advertisers and particularly the affiliate programs that you recommend actually say something about you as well. I'm probably a little less strict on the advertisers. I occasionally reject an advertiser because it's a product that I just completely disagree with philosophically, but I'm very careful about the affiliate programs that I recommend. I like to see them first and have a sample of them, or I like to know the person behind the product that I'm recommending and trust who they are as a person. The thing is, if you're recommending dodgy products, people then associate that dodgy product with you, even though you might not have produced it. If you've recommended it, then that says something about who you are as a blogger as well. So you need to be particularly careful about the affiliate programs that you're recommending. One of the dangers of running AdSense on your blog is that sometimes people target your blogs with dodgy products. Yesterday I had someone email me on my photography blog, and they'd seen an AdSense ad to a product that they'd actually had a bad experience with, and they'd assumed that that was my product. And so I had some work to do there to, save my brand in the eyes of that person. So that's an illustration, I guess, of how what appears on your site, whether it's an ad or whether it's content, actually can have an impact. So yeah, it's something that I do from time to time, particularly with the affiliate products. It is something to be aware of. Ed Mercer writes, what is the process if I want to use a post from someone else's blog on my blog? Do I need to get in touch with them and get their permission, or do I just make sure I credit them in a bio box at the end of the post? Ed, this is a question I get asked a lot. And there's a lot of misconceptions about this, and there's probably some differing opinions, but in my opinion, and it's a strong opinion, is that you should not use other people's content on your blog unless you have their direct permission, particularly if you are using the full post. If you are using someone else's post in full, I would actually argue that you should really never publish that. There's really no need to publish that. What I do, if I like something that someone has written, I would take a quote, a paragraph usually at the most. I put quote marks around it, making it really clear that this is a quote. I always would link back to that page, and I would always try and add something to that post itself of my own. So introduce the quote, say why you like it, add some of your own thoughts to it. This makes that quote unique. It gives something of yourself to it. If all you're doing is republishing other people's content, one, you're kind of just cluttering the web with the same content that's everywhere else, but you also risk, partly you risk copyright violations, but you also risk being penalized in Google for having duplicate content. When Google sees the same content on multiple sites, it basically makes a decision about, you know, which is the original, and it usually ranks the original higher, and it penalizes, or it just takes out of the index the content from the other publishers, or really ranks it quite lowly. So you actually run the risk of hurting your own SEO, search engine optimization, by using other people's content. So I'd really advise you against republishing other people's work that appears elsewhere online. You could get yourself into legal trouble by republishing other people's content, particularly if it's copyrighted. And it's, I would argue that it doesn't really give your readers much value if all you're doing is republishing other people's stuff. Add some of your own content, produce something that is unique and useful to people, and you'll build readership. I'm happy to talk more about that, but it's something I really feel quite strongly about. Donald Giannati asks, I am trying like crazy to get my bounce rate down. It seems that I have a lot of people hit the site but go no deeper than a page or two. They're coming in with good keywords, but it's almost like they don't know that there's more content there. That's a great question, and again, that I mentioned earlier, 21 ways to make your site sticky, as a post that I've written earlier on ProBlogger. That's a post, again, I would recommend that you read, because it's all about capturing that first-time visitor who arrives on your site, having, you know, typed something into Google, and who leaves a minute later, or, you know, even worse, a couple of seconds later. You want to capture their attention. You want to give them a reason to resubscribe. Particularly search engine traffic does tend to bounce. If people don't find what they're looking for in the first moment or two, they quite often will leave. One of the reasons that I see quite a few bloggers will probably have that problem is that they put so many ads above the fold on their site, which is above that point where you need to scroll down, that the content itself is sort of buried. So you want to have your content front and center. You want to have captivating titles that grab people's attention. And you want to have useful content. And then you want to give people a way to connect, to read more, to subscribe and keep coming back. One of the great plugins that most bloggers have, with WordPress at least, is related posts. So you can suggest some posts that people might want to read for further reading. Interlinking your posts from within the post is really important, so that people, as they're reading, will naturally be clicking around your site. All of these things, but yeah, again, 21 tips for sticky sites or something along those lines. You'll find it on ProBlogger. Needmoney.com asks, what would you do differently if you were starting your blog for the first time tomorrow? This is, again, a question I get asked a bit. And it's a good question, because one of the advantages that I have now, having been blogging for 7 years, is that when I launch a new blog, I've got the advantage of being able to leverage my old blogs and send traffic to it. And so if I was to start a new blog from scratch without any of the profile or the traffic that I already have, what would I do to get that blog going? particularly around finding traffic. I guess one of the things that I really encourage new bloggers to do is to, one, get your blog up and running and have some quality content on it, have a professional design and get it looking good. But then in terms of promoting it, you want to put yourself out there and start building relationships with other bloggers. And I guess the question that I many of you have heard me ask before is where is your potential traffic? Where are your potential readers already gathering online? And to think about the other blogs that are already out there that have the type of reader that you want. I would really advise guest posting, giving other blogs some of your better content to give their readers a taste of what you can do. Even consider some advertising on your blog. You can pick up pretty cheap advertising with StumbleUpon, Facebook, even MySpace ads. Quick disclosure, MySpace ads, my ads are an advertiser on ProBlogger, so take that into consideration. But those three options all have relatively cheap ways of putting an ad out there. You don't have to spend thousands to advertise on those sites. But yeah, look, I guess they'd be some of the things that I would do if I was starting a new blog for the first time tomorrow. If I was doing things differently from what I did previously, it would be getting good domain names, as I mentioned earlier. Starting with WordPress rather than Blogger. When I first started, I used Blogger, which was at the time had very few features, and I quickly upgraded to movable type and then to WordPress. So getting the right platform early, and those are some of the things that I would do differently. Chip Lone asks, I've only been blogging for about 6 or 7 weeks and I love it. Great. But I do run into problems. The blog I run is centered around gaming news. I report important stories, write reviews and opinions. What advice do you have for folks like myself, people who are passionate about a niche that may be bloated, very competitive and news-driven? One of the things that you mentioned you're doing, which I think is really great, is giving opinions. Particularly in news-driven niches, people actually like opinion. They want to know what you think about the news that you're writing about. Helping people to make sense of that news can be really important. A lot of bloggers just report the news and they don't actually add anything of themselves to it. So, yeah, next time a news story breaks, actually introduce it with, you know, with some ideas about why this news is important to people and how it might apply to them, and extend those ideas. Do prediction posts on the news that might happen in the future. These can be fun. They can also be good for your search engine optimization because you're starting to anticipate events that might happen in your niche. It also shows that you're a thought leader, that you're not just reacting to what's happening, but you're actually thinking positively about your industry. Yeah, I would keep going with those opinions. Reviews particularly are good. A lot of people search the web for reviews. And doing things a little differently, perhaps using some different media, use video if you can, some show people what you're talking about rather than just talking about it, injecting a little bit of humour into your posts, perhaps in the gaming industry you could be a little irreverent and you know, get a few laughs and actually be a bit entertaining as you write. They'd be some of the things. I guess it's about finding your own voice and your own style and then seeing what your readers do react well to and then doing more of that. Lunik KM asks, how do you tell someone that the question they are asking for advice with is one you don't have an interest in, unexperienced with, or is not in the scope of the blog without them feeling like you just don't have time to answer their questions? I don't like letting people down. That is a good question. That's something that I guess I struggle with as well. I'm a bit of a people pleaser, and so I like to be able to answer everyone's questions, but the reality is I don't know everything, and my expertise doesn't go to all areas. One of the things I've found really helpful on my photography blog, particularly to help with this, is that I started a forum. So I started a community area where people could post questions, where they could share their advice, they could interact with one another. And so if I get a question now that I don't know the answer to, or I just don't have the time to answer because I get a lot of emails, I quite often send the people an email back saying, thanks for your question, I'd love to be able to answer it, but it's not something that I can help with for one or another reasons, but I've got this forum area where our community is really smart and they will answer your questions. That forum now, over the last few years, has got something like 50,000 members, so there's someone in that forum who knows the answer to the question. So I refer people there, and the benefit of that is that quite often those people not only get the answers, but they actually discover a community who is on a similar journey to them. And so it increases that, I was talking about it before, the community of knowledge. Together we know a lot more, and it actually shows people a way to get an answer but also become a part of a community. So that's something that I actually, one of the side benefits, I guess, of having a forum. I hope that's helpful. Or you may actually refer them to someone else's forum. That is a, perhaps covers your niche in a wider way than you're able to. Katrina, does blogging have its own limitations? Yeah, well, blogging isn't for everyone. It does have some things that I guess can be difficult about it. One of the things I struggle with as a blogger is that once you've been blogging for a few years, you can end up with thousands of posts. ProBlogger has 5,000 posts in it. And in its natural default way of being set up, a blog only shows the last 10. Whilst you can, you know, use categories and tags and some of those things to highlight some of your older posts, sometimes once you get to a point you've been blogging a few years, it can be difficult to show people what else you've written previously on the topics that they might be interested in. And that's why I redesigned the front page of ProBlogger to be more like a portal that shows some of the key content, shows some of the popular posts and some of the most commented upon posts. So that's probably one of the limitations of having a blog, and I guess one of the challenges to overcome as your blog gets bigger is to how to get people deeper into your blog. Molly W asks, besides commenting other people, putting your blog in directories and such, are there other good suggestions for increasing blog traffic and getting more comments? Getting more comments, one of the key things that I'd really recommend you do is ask questions to get comments. The more direct questions you can ask in your posts, and even asking those questions in the title of your post, I find that triggers comments. In terms of getting traffic, I think I've covered this a little bit already, but guest posting, advertising a little bit, engaging in forums that are on your topic and actually becoming an expert in those spaces, engaging in social media, getting a Twitter account and interacting with other people who are talking about your type of your industry on Twitter, those are some things that I'd encourage you to do there. Amanda writes, should you mix personal posts, like it's my child's 13th birthday, here's the photos, with business advice info posts on a single blog, or should you have a personal blog to do this? This is one of those questions which can be answered in different ways, and different people will have a different stance on it. I personally like to keep my entrepreneurial blogs, for lack of a better term, my professional blogs, professional and on topic, but occasionally deviate. Occasionally find ways to inject some personality and even a glimpse at my personal life into them. One of the ways I've done this is, there's lots of ways, just telling stories that actually relate to your topic but include something from your personal life, or just the occasional announcement post. So when my two boys have been born, I've actually done a post saying I just had a boy. I think that's important enough that I can actually break with the topic. But there are other creative ways of actually weaving something of your personality and personal life into your blog. For instance, on ProBlogger, I wrote a post almost a year ago now in the voice of my son, who is two. And it was, you know, What You Don't Know About My Dad, the Pro Blogger, I think it was called, or something along those lines. And it had a little picture of him sitting at a computer and actually wrote a post which was very relevant to the topic of Pro Blogger, but in his voice. And in doing so, I was amazed at how many people actually commented upon that and found that, I guess, insightful. One, for the content, but two, that it was a more personal post. I personally would keep, you know, 99% of what I do on my blogs on topic and occasionally inject something else in. Other people would take a different approach and do much more personal and make that part of their brand. Really, it's up to you, but I think in most cases you'd want to stay on topic as much as possible. Eric Cummings asks, for my website, my fellow blogger and I write our posts way in advance of when we publish. So we set up an upcoming articles widget that shows our visitors what we'll be publishing a week ahead of time. I haven't seen anything else like this on the internet. Is there some negative side effect I haven't thought about? Or is it a good idea? What do you think? That's actually not a bad idea. Builds a sense of anticipation, gives people a reason to subscribe to your blog. I guess it may frustrate some readers that they can't read what's coming up next straight away, but I think most people would have experienced that when they watch advertisements on televisions of upcoming programs or episodes. I actually think that's quite a good idea. I'd like to see the widget that you've built. I might actually have to check out your site, but that, yeah, I actually like that. I think that is one good way of building some anticipation, building a sense of momentum on your blog, and giving your readers some insight into the fact that you actually write posts ahead of time and you have some sort of an editorial content. I think that's a good idea for lots of reasons. Good idea. Thanks for sharing it. Stock Traders Blog asks, I read much advice on blogging. One of them is to use your real name for your blog. I have seen many successful blogs, including yours, do that. Me, on the other hand, I'm always posting anonymously on my blog. Do you think this is going to cost me a lot of readers? Again, this is one of those things that there's no real right or wrong on this. There's a lot of successful blogs out there which are anonymous, and probably more blogs using their real name, so I think you can do either. If you have a good reason to stay anonymous, then I think that's good. One of the reasons people sometimes stay anonymous is to actually build a character, or, you know, build a sort of an alter ego, and to write in that style or in that voice. That can work as part of your brand. I personally don't have a problem with anonymous blogs. I probably do connect more with people who I can relate to, so a name, a face, a voice, but it really is up to you. I probably would lean more towards doing it in a real name, but that could just be my style. Paresh asks, I'm reading your book and working through the workbook. My question is that I'm struggling to find enough resources on UK affiliate programs. I think that's what you've asked. This is a problem that people in different locations have. The majority of the affiliate programs that you'll find on the web are perhaps a little bit more focused on the US market, but there are affiliate programs in different regions. So I know in Australia there are a variety of affiliate programs. They're not as big, and perhaps not as developed as in the US, but there are there. So if your audience is from a particular region, it's worth doing some searching around. Even doing some searches, say your keyword affiliate marketing and then UK, or doing it in the UK, the .co.uk search engine on Google may help you to find those. Have a look at some other UK sites and see what affiliate programs they're promoting. And that's a great tip for anyone who wants to get into affiliate marketing, is actually look at who your competitors are promoting. If there's another blog or website or forum out there and they're doing a promotion on an affiliate product, there are chances are that you could sign up for that same product. So yeah, see what other people are doing and you know, click on those links and follow them and find out if they've got an affiliate program that's public. Dr. Dave Hale asks, being a fledgling blogger, I want to know what is the best strategies to drive traffic to my blogs. I think we've kind of covered this above, but yeah, it really comes down to great unique content on your site, putting yourself out there in different forums, websites, blogs, social networking. I guess it's about finding where your potential readers are gathering and participating in them there. Dave also asks, what are the first and easiest ways to monetize my blogs? Good question. Again, it depends a little upon your blog, your topic, your niche. But in general, most bloggers tend to start out with an ad network, whether that be AdSense, Chitika, Shopzilla, some of those ones, which it's just a matter of adding a little bit of code to your website and being paid per click quite often. If you want to start with affiliate marketing, a good one to start with is good old Amazon, who will pay you between 4% and 6% or 7% or 8%, depending on how much you sell, when people buy a product after clicking on your link. So they're some good starting ones, just to get a bit of a feel for them. But as your blog grows, what you need to be doing is starting to think about how can you build direct advertising relationships with advertisers or sponsorship arrangements. You don't need masses of traffic to be able to do that. Even small deals can actually be good over the long haul. For example, on my first photography blog, I quite often would ring up camera stores and say, hey, would you like to advertise on my site? I'm only doing, you know, a few hundred visitors a day, but I'd be able to do, you know, a deal for, you know, $20-$30 a month. It wasn't much, but it got me started. So to get those sort of direct ad sales deals, you need to be proactive, put yourself out there, approach companies that you think might be interested. But yeah, you probably will want to start with something a little bit more automated than that, like AdSense or Chitika or Amazon's affiliate program. Are there opportunities on the web to blog for companies who advertise? Dave again asked that. I think you mean getting jobs as bloggers. Yes, there's increasingly a lot of companies starting to hire bloggers, and again, not to self-promote too much, but if you go to jobs.problogger.net, you'll see a whole heap of ads there for people advertising for bloggers. Mark asks, what suggestions would you have for a site that has no peers? It seems that my idea has little or no competition. I'm curious how one would market such a site. Well, that's kind of good in some ways, but it's difficult in others. It's good that you might not have too much competition. You might be first to this niche. It may also be an indication that really there's not much to write about on that topic, or that you've chosen a very, very, very narrow niche. Yeah, so there's some good and bad there. The challenge, I guess, is for you to work out where your readers are gathering online if there's no direct competition. I'd probably be looking at larger sites. For instance, if it's a technological niche, for instance, if there was a new product that's just come out, a new gadget, I'd be looking at sites like Engadget or Gizmodo or some of those big sites that have an overlap with your niche. They may not be exactly the same niche, but they might have the same type of reader. You know, sites like Lifehacker, they cover a lot of topics in the one place, and there may be some overlap. That's where I'd probably be spending time trying to build a presence. It's a little bit hard to answer without actually knowing the niche, but I guess you'd also be thinking about the type of demographic that you wanted to reach. You may not have another site out there with the exact same topic, but you might have this another site out there with a similar sort of demographic or interest group or an age group or whatever it might be. So yeah, I'm not sure I've answered that question as well as I could without knowing the topic, but I hope it's helped. Salman asks, how do I get backlinks? Backlinks. Let me just explain what a backlink is for those of you who are new to blogging. A backlink is really a link from another website, and the reason they matter is that they actually help to grow your site's search engine ranking. Each link to your site is like a little vote in the eyes of Google, and that helps for them to think your site is valuable in some way or another. How do you get those backlinks? Well, really, it comes down to a number of things, but ultimately it's about writing link-worthy posts, the type of content that people want to tell other people about. So if people's first reaction when they read your post is, I need to tell someone about this, you'll get links. And that's one of the objectives that I have in mind as I'm writing posts. How can I write something here that people want to pass on to their friends, whether that be on their blogs or on Dig or StumbleUpon or on Twitter? That's part of it. Another part of it is about promoting your work. So if you write a post that you think is particularly relevant for other blogs in your niche, you might want to send them a quick email with the link to your post. This might seem a little spammy or a little pushy, but if you do it in a polite way, in a way that doesn't beg for links or assume that you'll get a link, it can actually pay off. I know I'm linking to other people in my niche on Twitter particularly all day, and a lot of them come from people actually saying, hey, I wrote this, take a look. Sometimes I link, sometimes I don't. Yeah, I guess the other part is building relationships with other bloggers in your niche so that they actually are aware of you and they're following your RSS feed. Linking to other people's sites can often get you a return link. People come to check out, who's linking to me? Oh, this is a site that's relevant to me, and they might subscribe, and that relationship might grow. Hamilton Wallace asks, my blog is part of my website. I'm a consultant, and my goal is to convert more visitors into leads. My question revolves around conversion. What two or three mistakes do bloggers make that hurt their conversion rates? Or what two or three things do you find yourself recommending bloggers do to increase that conversion? Okay, so if I understand correctly, you've got a business, and you have a blog associated with your overall business site, and you're trying to convert readers into customers for your business, or get people across to your website. One of the mistakes that I see bloggers doing is running advertising on their blogs if their primary goal is actually to sell themselves. So I'd avoid that. Really, it is about seeing your business as an advertiser to your site, and so you want to place the calls to action in strategic positions. Above the fold, you might want to create a little banner ad of your own to run on your site to actually drive people across. But ultimately, it's about showing your expertise and showing why people would want to hire you or why people would want to buy something from you. So the type of blogging that you do needs to be blogging that showcases your talents, that showcases your abilities. And the other thing I'd recommend is to teach on your blog general principles. And what I found, particularly with ProBlogger, I used to offer consulting on that blog, and what I did on ProBlogger was talk about general principles of making money from blogs, and then I would have people come and say, can you help me to apply this to my situation as a consultant, and I'll pay you for that. You might want to just talk more in general principles about your topic, showcase your worth and your expertise, and drive people across that way. The other thought I had was that you might want to do some case studies and actually show what you can do. I did this. I can remember I wrote a post a number of years ago now on ProBlogger. It was a post on how Jeff Jarvis from Buzz Machine, who's quite a large A-list blogger, could make more money from his AdSense ads. And I actually showed people, without his permission, I mean, he had his site up there anyway, anyone could see what he was doing with AdSense. And I basically did a walk through his site, a free consultation for him, without him even knowing I was doing it, just with some general advice on how he could improve his AdSense performance. The next day, I had requests from people saying, hey, could you do that with my site? I'll pay you to do it. So showcasing what you can do, sometimes doing a public consultation, if you like, could help. Okay, Phage asks, do we only leave comments on recent posts of other bloggers and use old posts to link to? I'm not really sure what you're asking there, but if it's about promoting yourself as a blogger and engaging in other people's comments, you probably the most logical place to do that would be on their more recent posts, because there would be comment sections where there'll be more people coming, and so what you're really wanting to do there is to actually showcase again your expertise. Leaving comments that actually help people, that engage with people on their blogs, that will actually highlight who you are to their other readers. And so to do that in a more active comment space rather than on old posts is probably better. Okay. Aruna, I just got your book. Here we go. My question is about organizing blog posts and using categories. Do you recommend it using many specific categories? Right now I probably have at least 30. Or narrowing it down to a smaller number. How many? Again, this is something that I see a lot of different approaches on. My personal preference is not to have 30. I think on ProBlog I probably do have quite a few these days and need to cull a few. But I find if you have too many, they kind of lose their significance a little bit. But then if you don't have enough, you end up with just these mega categories. It's a tough one. I guess it depends partly upon the topic, but I'd probably aim for 10 or so, and then maybe have a catch-all one. That's always been my approach, but yeah, it's not something I've put a lot of time and effort into thinking about for my own blogs. Similarly with tags, I haven't really used tags too much either, and I probably could improve my own blogs by thinking more about how I do that. I don't know that I really helped with that one, sorry. Okay, Chris asks, I would like to know if you have any design layout lessons to maximize ease of reading. I'm specifically interested in column layout and sidebar suggestions. I'm not a designer, Chris. I have not designed a blog since 2002. So it's not my area of expertise. However, I know my own personal preference is to try and keep things as simple as possible. You may not think that looking at the front page of ProBlogger, which is quite cluttered at the moment, but on posts particularly, I think you need to keep your content front and center, keep as much of it above the fold as you can. I personally, I like blogs with one column at the most. Now, two columns, one sidebar and one content area. I know at times it's just impossible and you need to have more than that, but yeah, I like sort of wider, more open, clean layouts personally, and I think anything that takes focus away from the content actually can really hurt your site's stickability and getting people to subscribe. So I guess the other thing I would say on that is you've got to really think about what is your prime objective with someone who comes to your site for the first time. Is it to get a subscriber, or is it to get a click on a link, or is it to get them to buy your product? Whatever that first thing you want people to do needs to be in the hot zone on your site, and so you really need to think carefully about your priorities. What do you want people to do? And then start with that, in putting that in a prime location. And then what do you want people to do next if they're still there? Then put that in the secondary position. So really thinking about it in that sort of way, rather than just is it pretty, I think can be helpful. Which Stan Dubbin asks, which method of following your blog do you consider more valuable, through the RSS feed or via a newsletter? I actually think both. I don't prioritize them really. I know. Yeah, it probably differs a little from blog to blog. I've put more effort on my photography blog into my newsletter because that's a medium. Email is a medium that readership is much more familiar with than RSS. Whilst I do have quite a few RSS subscribers on that blog, I have more newsletter email subscribers. And that's simply because that readership is more focused upon email. On ProBlogger, the readers tend to follow more through RSS or these days through Twitter. I know an increasing amount of my readers are using Twitter more than they're actually using RSS, and they're reading the links that appear in their Twitter feeds. So I guess it's about knowing your audience and focusing in those particular areas. Having said all that, I think email is really underrated. A lot of people have written it off, but I actually think it's incredibly powerful. I know with the launch of the 31 Days to Build a Better Blog workbook, the affiliates who've been promoting that, the ones who've converted the best have been the ones who have email lists who've promoted it via email rather than via Twitter or as blog posts and to RSS readers. So yeah, email's quite powerful in that way. So it's about knowing your audience. Okay, I've got 5 minutes left in the podcast. Let me try and power through. I'm only halfway. Melissa asks, let me get to the actual question here. Melissa O'Connell, recently I wrote a post about a modified vegan muffin recipe that my family and I have been enjoying. I gave credit to the book and the authors who I got it from and added their book on Amazon to my site. Do you think this is an appropriate way to introduce it to my readers and give proper credit where credit is due? I'm not familiar with the actual law when it comes to recipes, so you probably will want to ask a food blogger that question. My own stance on that is similar to what I mentioned before. I really hesitate to use full posts from other sites or really long quotes from books. I think you probably get away with it if you're promoting the actual book in some ways. Quite often authors will give you an excerpt which you can use. So perhaps you could have actually approached the author of that book to actually ask if you're allowed to do that. I know a couple of food bloggers who actually have done that. They've actually asked authors if they can use, you know, recipes and that type of thing. On the legalities, I'm not really sure, so you probably need to do a little bit more research on that. But I think you've kind of covered yourself a little bit with the credit. But wherever possible, get permission on those sorts of things. Someone called C asks, do you think it's important to have dates on posts? Doesn't dating an article make it less likely to be read? Good one. This is a question that I get occasionally, and there's always a debate when I talk about it. I am not someone who says you have to have dates on posts. I have three blogs. Two of the blogs have dates on the posts. The third doesn't. Digital Photography School doesn't have dates. Not on the posts themselves. On the comments it does, but on the posts itself it doesn't. The reason for that is that the content on Digital Photography School is much more timeless. It's a much more advice that applies whether you're reading it today, in 2007, or whether you read it in 2010. It's more general advice on photography, and a lot of that advice doesn't change. Where I write something that is time-specific on that blog, I will make a note in that post that this was written on a certain date. On the other hand, blogs like ProBlogger or TwitTip, they're more time-sensitive. I'm writing about technologies, and those technologies date. I'm writing about advice that works today that might not work tomorrow, and so I keep dates on those posts. You're right, when you have a date on a post, it can date that post in some people's minds. And so I've done it myself. I'll admit, I arrive on a site, I look at the post, I think, oh, this looks interesting. Oh, it was written in 2004. It's old. And sometimes I'll get over that, and you know, I find that post helpful anyway. But quite often I'll look at that date and go, yeah, this probably isn't relevant. So, yeah, there's some of the pros and cons of that. Now, it really comes down to what you want to achieve and the type of content that you have. Mr. I asks, I have no problem with content. It's fine, but what I lack is a promotional strategy. How can I build a good strategy and stick with it? Talked a little bit about some of the strategies that I would use earlier. In terms of sticking with those strategies, so you might think guest posting is something that you want to do. Actually schedule it into your week. And if you go to, I think it was day 31 of the 31 day workbook, you actually find there that I suggest that you do a plan for your month. I think I also did, there was a post one of the days towards the end on actually planning your promotional strategy as well. So you actually need to think about, okay, what's important to me? What do I want to achieve? Guest posting, yes, I want to do that. I want to interact in four forums in my niche. I want to leave comments on these three blogs and build relationships with these four bloggers. So you might have a list of 10 things that you think is important to you to promote your blog. Actually, get your calendar out and assign yourself two of those activities for each of the weekdays of your week. You know, today I'm going to leave comments on this forum and this blog. Tomorrow I'm going to write a guest post. The day after I'm going to interact more on Twitter and build up relationships with other people on Twitter. On Friday I'm going to email these bloggers just to see how they're doing and perhaps suggest a link that I'd written. You actually need to plug those things in, they're important. If you don't do that, I find most of us just sort of do it when we think of it, and we quite often don't think of it. So actually, if something's important to you, schedule it into your own schedule. Well, we've just reached the 1 hour and 1 minute mark of this podcast, so I'm aware that I've only got through just over half of the questions. I apologize if I didn't get to your question, but I hope that this hour has been helpful to you. I'm slowly or quickly losing my voice here, so I think I'd better stop. But again, thank you for buying 31 Days to Build a Better Blog. A few people have been asking me, is there going to be another one? I don't know at this point, possibly. To be honest, that 31 day period and then pulling together the workbook was a lot of work, and it's left me a little tired, so I need a bit of a break in terms of producing that type of content again, because it was quite labor intensive. But I will let you know, you're on the email list. If you're not on the email list to get more updates of 31 days, please do subscribe to that, but I will let you know if there is another one. Again, thank you for your time today, and thanks for buying the workbook. This is Darren Rouse from ProBlogger signing off.